The first one is biogenesis. B-I-O-G-E-N-E-S-I-S. Biogenesis. Life from life. Only life begets life. We shall see that the evolutionists have to deny this, yet all science has proved it. And they're working their, as far as they fool's heads off. I shouldn't say that on teletype, whatever it is here, videotape. But they don't like that term, biogenesis. They only like the term abiogenesis. A-B-I-O-G-E-N-S-I-S. Abiogenesis. A-B-I-O and Genesis. Can't spell it, look at the first book in the Bible. Abiogenesis is spontaneous generation. And of course it comes from that alpha negative prefix in front of biogenesis, which negates it. And we will quote from a number of evolutionists. Admitting, most of them admit, that there's no proof whatsoever of abiogenesis. None at all. But it must have taken place. And of course, if they're atheists, it has to. It's here. And if there isn't any God, there must have been abiogenesis, but the thing of it is, there is a God, as anybody but a fool knows, as the scripture says. The fool has said in his heart there is no God. And we shall see a great number of great scientists who were atheists and evolutionists until they actually studied the evidence. Many of them were converted. In fact, if you read after some of the greatest ones, I was just reading last night, one by a man that was a lawyer, confessed that he was an atheist and an evolutionist until he graduated high school, I mean from college. And then, he just had never studied any evidence. Then when he began to really study the evidence on the other side of the fence, and the lack of evidence in all evolution, I have yet to have found one iota, one scintilla of evidence to support evolution. It's all manufactured. Might sound very plausible if you go to college and or high school and listen to a biology teacher talk as though he were there and saw the whole thing. In fact, help him. I have several testimonies, well, more than that. I've got a dozen testimonies by very eminent men in their fields. And of course, if they were not saved when they were very small in a godly family, all of them were absolute atheists after they came out of college, if they weren't saved till after college, and evolutionists. But biogenesis, abiogenesis, and parthenogenesis. Partheno. P-A-R-T-H-E-N-O-S. Parthenogenesis. It has been abbreviated into Partheno. Genesis. P-A-R-T-H-E-A-R-Genesis. Virgin birth. Another spelling is parthenogenesis. P-A-R-T-H-E-N-O. G-E-N-S-I-S. Virgin birth. And of course, they make much of it. There are some creatures in nature, some insects, many plants, that are self-fertilizing. So that they can reproduce by themselves. And they try to say that, therefore, a human can have parthenogenesis. It is only natural that the Bible answers this question, where did I come from? And nowhere outside of the Bible is it adequately answered. That's not just a dogmatic, biased opinion, though I admit I'm biased. It's like someone said, you should argue the virgin birth unbiasedly. It'd be like trying to argue the virginity of your wife unbiasedly. Can't do it. It's like the atheist wanting to argue with me about the existence of God unbiasedly. I'm very biased. For I know he lives. Period. It's like that this last wave of nonsense of God is dead. By this young Methodist theologian. Arguing God is dead. And of course his God was. The scripture says all the gods of the heathen are dead. There are no gods. Then he came out with that nonsense. And a few others joined him. Their God was dead too. I said I had a few questions to ask. If he is dead, who killed him? For a God who made everything is omnipotent. Second, who carried his work on? The sun came up this morning beautifully. After a while. The earth turning on its axis? My feet still hold to the ground. Everything's gone along nicely this morning. I don't notice any turmoil at all. Well, if God is dead, somebody's carrying his work on. And third, if God is dead, who did I talk to this morning? It's like the little boy flying a kite, and the kite was up in the clouds, and he had the string tugging on it, and man came along and says, how do you know there's a kite up there? He said, I can see the sun. It's still up there. Sure it was. Well, anyone who's been born again of the Spirit of God doesn't need to worry about God being dead. He knows he lives. There is no adequate answer outside the Scriptures. If the Scripture does not answer, you don't believe the Scriptures, you don't have any answer. Evolution, we shall see, is no answer at all. There's not one scintilla of truth for evolution. Not one. In fact, everything's against it. And suddenly you can't take the cosmogonies of heathenism with all of their absolute nonsense. The Bible has the answer. And here were the answer, as the answer to man's origin. Man is a present effect, in spite of what Berkeley and Christian Science says. Man is here, and the man's an answer. How did he get here? The cause of existence, of his existence. He's very complicated. Individual. Physically, mentally, and spiritually. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. for Sanders said. In Christian apologetics, we shall see some of the various complications. Physically, this is quite a mechanism. From the time in embryology at conception until death, physically, it's the most remarkable mechanism on the face of the earth. But that's not but part of it. Socially and spiritually, he's a remarkable mechanism. With his self-consciousness and self-determination, knowing himself, and where did he come from? In apologetics, we say you either have to believe in God or poof, which would be spontaneous generation or the Big Bang Theory, or call it what you want to. Either in the beginning God or poof, wasn't anything, and then all poof, here it is. Well, I haven't seen poof make anything yet. For thousands of years, I guess ever since man's been on the earth, man has wondered about his origin, as well as his destiny, as well as his purpose of why he's here now. You look at all this turmoil around about you. People are trying to be happy. They're trying to find euphoria. They're trying to find a purpose for life. They're trying to do their own thing, they call it. Well, this crazy idea now in yogis and all the rest, I'm trying to find the real me. Dope. You'll find it there. Unless you do make a fool out of yourself in it. That's the real you. Now, starting our lesson in anthropology, man's origin negatively considered. And of course, as we said, there's only one other theory worth even considering, because it's so widespread, and that's evolution. And of course, if there weren't any God, it'd be about the best you could do. When you pull the Bible out. But remember, if there isn't any God, you not only have to explain the origin of man, but of all creation. Matter, force, order, harmony, uniformity, pattern, design. And we shall see a little later, every evolutionist who denies God has to postulate his own God, nature, or nature's law. That's a poor substitute. You can tell because they capitalize it. And they ascribe unto it all the attributes of God. Omniscient, omnipotent, it can do everything. And it can plan everything. They call it wise provisions of nature. That's deity. You might just as well get that old sister, Mother Nature, out there. And don't fool us. Evolution never was built upon logic, logical necessity. It was built upon an assumption. Here's the beautiful thing. I've come across it later in one of the divisions. You must reject evolution because of the pure guesswork involved. That's a separate division later. But here we're only introducing the theory. I've just finished reading two textbooks on evolution used at Yale University, written by the leaders in every one of their departments. In biology, even the president of Yale wrote one of them, one of the articles. and I was utterly floored. I'd read it about 35 years ago. And I thought, well, I'll read it again for this class. And I was utterly floored at the suppositions. For almost 50 pages, I counted over 100 suppositions. I think there were 37 different ones. It may well be, or perhaps it may well be, or we can assume it, or this is the assumption, or this is our estimate, or it is commonly believed. That's a strange thing. They say you can't teach religion because it's a belief. And yet believe and faith is used, and even the word faith is used in this book. Yet this is supposed to be science, not faith. What really bugs me is that they use all this stumble-bumming around on suppositional phrases and suppositional terminology. And then all of a sudden, and now since we have proven the fact of evolution, we'll go on. Brother. I'll have a lot more to say about that. But let me give this in starting. Remember, evolution is assumed as a fact. By every teacher in our secular colleges and high schools. Verified. Absolutely. Incontrovertible. Evolution took place. Where, why, how, what, when, wherefore, they don't know. They say the fact of evolution is established. It's the processes, the mechanics we don't know. The president of Yale, in this book, Evolution of Man, page 103, wrote, "It may be assumed without argument that evolution has actually occurred." Now, for 37 pages, he's been arguing and assuming. Now he says, "It may be assumed without argument that evolution has actually occurred." Then he said, "I shall proceed at once to examine the processes." I haven't an evolutionary book in my library that doesn't do the same thing. H.G. Wells spent, I think, 17 pages proving that abiogenesis was absolutely unprovable and that biogenesis, life only comes from life. He gave Pinder's experiments. He gave Pasteur's experiments, throwing out forever the idea that life could come out of decaying matter spontaneously. Then he says, but, he reminds me of Ben on TV, who gives you the bad news or good news, and then he says, but, and then he always stops on that pessimistic note because he's anti-Reagan. But he says, H.G. Wells says, but in a more propitious time and in a better condition and better climate, and mind you, that was back there when the earth was red hot and gaseous and all the rest, it must have taken place. And then they accuse us of blind credulity for believing in Jesus Christ. It's amazing. This is the so-called scientific theory of man's origin. Having rejected any supernatural account of the origin of man, without a hearing, men have sought for some natural answer to the perplexing question of, where did I come from? It must be remembered that the theory of evolution is contrary in total to the biblical account. I've never had any patience whatsoever with theistic evolution. It's a misnomer. I don't believe there's any such animal evolved as theistic evolution. Either the Bible is true or evolution is true. Both aren't. Here's why I've never been afraid that they might find a missing link. I'll show you a little later. They don't have to look in caves and under glaciers and in a coal mine or somewhere for a missing link. A lot of walking around on Earth. Some of them teaching biology. You know, by the way, I've taught this class for a great number of years, and I've had some skeptical brethren come up to me and say, "Brother Bragg, you have too much levity in your antagonism to evolution." And I've answered them. I said, "How in the world can you take those fairy tales seriously?" I'll show you some of them as we go along. I've already mentioned this Sprecher deal. How in the world can you teach that as sober science without cracking up? But a Sprecher came on right here. And fortunately, another freckle. And then they grazed over. Now, remember, in millions of years, nobody believes that any organ came overnight. Now, of course, now they're getting this hope for monster theory. I'll come across that a little later. Or this punctuated equilibrium, they call it. That sounds better than hope for monster. The same thing, it's just different names. But any other name will still speak. I'm paraphrasing Shakespeare. I goes by any other name. Still stinks. No, I mean no. How anyone in the world, now we give this more in apologetics on that part of it, but how anybody in the world can believe that for millions of years you could keep these two freckles right in the right place. And remember, they were on all fours at that time. Why in the world they didn't get two freckles where you sit down? Remember, a fly got 4,000 in each eye. And a spider has 8 of them. Why did we stop with just two? And why did we stop with just one and not have stereoptic vision? And then how about the optic nerves? And how about the wonderful thing that they cross over before they get to the brain so that you see everything right side up? If they didn't, everything would be upside down. Of course, you'd be used to it by now, if everybody else did too. And then they say, you have too much levity. You make it a laughing thing. I can't do anything else. I have a little poem I'll give you that I wrote several years ago. It's one of my few excursions into the field of poetry. But it's an ode to an amoeba cell. That's something to look forward to. But you cannot reconcile the Bible with evolution. You need to read all the new evangelicals as they try to do it. They want to hold on to evolution and hold on to the Bible, like Bernard Rand and your brother Strong in his commentary. But there's no way. They can't be reconciled by any means. You can have the Bible, or you can have evolution. But you can't have both. The Bible is very plain as to the origin of man. The immediate creation by God Almighty. Now, the thing. I'd rather be an out and out evolutionist than to be a theistic evolutionist. They're really walking the tight wire. But remember, evolution comes out of atheism. Pure and simple. It does not want to believe the biblical account of man's origin. And it's the very best that man can do. And I'll show you how foolish it is. It's ridiculous. It's ludicrous. Like I've always said, if the theory of evolution were in this book, do you think any scientist on the face of the earth would believe it? That's a good theory. They wouldn't. They'd throw it out. They'd laugh it out of court. They said, see there, the Bible is the most foolish thing on earth. Look what it teaches. The man came a monkey. A polywog. Then they'd probably teach creationism. Remember this, evolution is theistic. Atheistic. Gotta get the word straight out. It is a preference of brute ancestry. Let me quote one not in your notes by H.G. Wells. He writes to the first Adam. He was a low-browed, hair-covered, rotten meat-eater who would eat his sick and unhealthy children when food was scarce and seek larger animals only when they were in a dying state. Or helpless. So according to H.G. Wells, man was a human buzzard. And a garbage disposal. That's his preference. And I've read most of H.G. Wells' work. I give in your notes Barbellion's statement, and I want you to notice his preference. He says, how I hate the man who talks about brute creation, with an other emphasis on the word brute. Now, I want to make sure that you know this is Barbellion talking, not Bragg. As for me, I'm proud of my close kinship with other animals. I take jealous pride in my simian ancestry. Remember, that's monkey to you. I like to think I was once a magnificent, hairy fellow. Now you know it is not I. Hairy fellow living in the trees. And that my frame came down through the geological ages of time via sea jelly and worms and amphioxus. That's a small sea animal. Fish, dinosaur, and ape. Who can exchange these for the pallid couple in the Garden of Eden? I never get the idea that Adam and Eve were pallid. I think they were pretty well suntanned. They weren't weak. Sickly, pallid. I'd exchange my body any day for Adam's. After 6,000 years of sin, what he has done to the human body. Someone has said it's not a question anymore of am I my brother's keeper as to Cain, but now am I my keeper's brother, the monkey said. What's the preference of these two fellows? One of them. They seem to be proud of their monkey ancestry. I haven't talked to the monkeys yet. This shows the preference. Evolution claims man's body came to him through an infinite number of evolutions. I've already denied soul, because an animal doesn't have one. I've never met a real evolutionist who believes in soul or spirit or man's spiritual nature. He's nothing but a body. Mechanical. Of course, they're hard put to explain why he wants to worship. An animal doesn't. But through an infinite number of evolution from the lower forms to the higher, through inherent forces from a sea jelly, through all forms of fish and animal life, through monkeys, apes, gorillas. By the way, almost all evolutionists now have switched from the apes and the gorillas and said that back there somewhere there was a parting in the paths and the apes came from one and we came from another. They're not as proud of their human ancestry as some of the early evolutionists were. But his complex mind came from the simple nervous impulse of ganglia of the lower worms and so on. His moral nature came from the simple rudimentary signs of moral sense in animals, such as the skulk of a dog. All this evolved over vast geological ages, covering hundreds of millions of years, and some say billions. While many of them, like Townsend in his evolutionary family tree, says 10,000 years. We'll see a little later. This is one of the vagaries, one of the guesses. Difference in time. We'll come to that later. But by trial and error, hit or miss, pure chance, no design, no designer. So they make Mother Nature a designer before they get through, every one of them. Because nature shows design. As we were using apologetics, if the eye wasn't made for seeing, what was it made for? Was it designed to see? Or just for a lover to look into and see love lying there, and lying and lying and lying? But they will not allow any divine supervision. Now note, evolution is not a science. It's a theory. Most honest, real scientific evolutionists, I've got dozens of their quotations, have said that it must always remain a theory. A theory. It's not observable. And it's not reproducible. Therefore, it can't be a science. A science has to be something you can reproduce by demonstration. Or it's not science. It can't be proven. That's why in chemistry, you can take two parts of hydrogen, one part of oxygen, put them together, and have water. You've got a formula. It's scientific. It's not a theory. Now, it's a fact. But nobody was back there and saw anything happen. And neither can any scientist reproduce it in the laboratory. Hence, it's a theory. Not a fact. They do like to use the word hypothesis. Sounds a lot better than guess. But a hypothesis is a guess. It's not a fact. Professor Conklin, an evolutionist, he wrote one of the articles for the Evolution of Man in this Yale University Press book. Declares emphatically, evolution must ever remain a theory. Period. The theory of evolution, concisely stated according to Leconte, by the way, he's not the first one to teach evolution. Evolution is 3,000 years old. Many of the ancients taught some form, the Phoenicians, caught 1,000 years before Christ. But man first wobbled out of the mud. Empedocles in B.C. 495 taught abiogenesis, spontaneous generation. And remember, they breathed it on down to Tyndall and Pasteur. All doctors did. All science believed in abiogenesis. Life spontaneously grew out of rotten material. Grow flies by abiogenesis. Not by eggs, but by abiogenesis. Sprang out of feces. Democritus in 460 BC taught an atomic theory of infinitesimal particles of matter with motion and substance by chemicals forming combined life. Alimandrus, a few centuries later, taught life came out of the sea spontaneously. Lucretius in Persia taught the theory of evolution. Aristotle taught it, 348 B.C. Evolutionists under Darwin tried to pawn off all the old theories of evolution as brand new. They're not new at all. Ever since man's been theorizing about his origin, he's been wrong. Lecoq's definition is the one most all of them follow. His name was Charles Marie Lecoq in 1894. He taught that evolution is a continuous progressive change according to fixed laws and by resident forces. Lamarck, 40 or 50 years before Darwin, taught evolution. William Huxley, a successor to Darwin, declared, "It is clear that the doctrine of evolution is directly antagonistic to that of creation." And continued, "As applied to the creation as a whole, it is opposed to that of direct creation." And if consistently accepted, he said, it makes the Bible unable to believe the Bible. Here's why you can't believe in theistic evolution. It's atheistic. Carl Vogt said, evolution turns the creator out of doors. You don't need one. No wonder, for 100 years, man has looked with a microscope from one end of the earth to the other, trying to find a missing link. Trying to find one scintilla of evidence. It doesn't have to be much, because they can manufacture the rest of it. We should see that in the missing links. Most of them have proved, they're either proven fake, or just monkeys or humans. No links. As in the anthropomorphic mind. But the sum total of all the relics, all the bones ever found by man that they even claim to be a missing link couldn't fill a bushel basket. And most of them have only one or two pieces. And any good doctor or scientist who wasn't so biased that he wants to believe in evolution to tell you that from a little piece of bone you can't reconstruct the whole man. Period. But coming back to Lecomte's definition, notice the three elements in his definition. Continuous progressive change. In other words, the process of making man from lesser form should still be going on. It is continuous and progressive. Most evolutionists say that the process stopped when man was made. Why? Like I've often said, any good woman could tell you that a better job to be made than that of the average man, maybe the one she got. In fact, it seems like most women, as soon as they make a man, even though they might have called him wonderful before they married him, they start a business of reconstruction. Because they see so many ways he can be improved upon. I think that's why so many of them trade him in for a later model. But get that, number one, it can't stop. It must always be going forward. Why then aren't there misfits all over the place? We should see later. Why should you have to search all over the earth trying to find a missing link? They shouldn't be missing. And like I've always said, the thing more wonderful about the missing link is it's still missing. There should be a graduation all down the line. No missing links at all. I'll show you a little later that many of the great scientists, here's why that they got this hopeful monster theory, they saw that. They said, well, the very species themselves are the missing links. Look at number two. According to fixed law, that is to say, there could be no change in the method. If it were going on 10,000 years ago or 10 million years ago, it should be going on today. It is fixed. It shouldn't have stopped. It couldn't have been one thing until it made man and changed from their development within man. Third, it was by resident forces. That turns the creator out of doors, as the man said. No outside interference. I don't tell them you can get Mother Nature into it. Natural law. It is in resident forces. It has to be from within. No divine supervision as well as no divine creation. The theory of evolution, trying to explain the origin of man, does not tell where any of the material came from which man evolved. It makes a number of notable failures in explaining or explanation down the family tree. Look at the second paragraph on page 3 for a simple summary of the theory of evolution. Remember, this is gathering together a great number of family trees. I have 4 or 5 family trees gotten up by different evolutionists. I have 2 books that seemingly contradict each other. I have The Ascent of Man by Darwin, and I have The Descent of Man by Henry Drummond. And I don't find any 2 family trees agree as who should be on it. Now, almost all of them, since it is always upward, start with a single cell animal. A single cell animal, an amoeba, or a protozoan. It is the simplest animal life on earth. Now, I'll show you a little later on, it's not as simple as they say. Before the 300,000 power electron microscope, it did look simple. It looked like just a very little small nucleus surrounded by a lot of jelly and a little skin on the outside. Now we know that that thing is a wonderful thing. Man can't make one. And if he did, he can't make it live. That thing is made up of 1,000 small metrochronia in the inside of it. And then that 1,000 metrochronia has from 40 to 50,000 little outfits in it that jump up and down at 1,800 feet per second. And that's what turns chemicals into proteins for you to live on. In your cells. Your body cells made on the same plan as that protozoan. Besides having 30 amino acids and all other kinds of chemicals. And the process of osmosis, bringing the nourishment from the outside in and simple. Yet this is the manufacturing plant of every living thing. Every living thing depends upon that simple cell that's built just about like that protozoa, which is the simplest animal on the face of the earth. And some dispute about being an animal, but all microbiologists so teach. Popular Science magazine, monthly, in 1935, March issue, I cut it out. All life on this planet, even human life, originated in a tiny, slimy speck resembling transparent jelly, found in ponds of water along the shore of the primeval seas over 1 billion years ago. End of the quotation from Scientific Monthly. Now look at this paragraph. The first life on this planet, just like that, they start. But they can't tell you where that first life came from. This is why we'll say all the way through here, as a theory of origin, it is a complete flop. It doesn't tell you the origin of a thing. I'll quote that a little later and what some of the evolutionists have said. But this little animal, this little amoeba, this little protozoan, and by the way, they exhaust Latin to name this rascal. In this little ode to the amoeba, I will give you some of the names. I had looked up through all kinds of dictionaries and foreign expressions to try to find some different names for this little rhizopoda. But somewhere or other, it developed. Maybe into a snail. Just like that. Ipso facto. Presto dominocus. Suddenly, they're snails. Now, then some form of worms. Almost everybody puts worms in our ancestry. And some of them eat them. Did you see that the other day with this fellow out in California growing earthworms? And he thinks they're delicious. I don't know if he came from a monkey or not, but he must have come from a chicken. Then through some fish stages. Finally becoming amphibious. Learning to breathe air instead of water or both. Finally into a frog-like existence. Now remember, this is not a fairy tale. This is serious scientific fiction. Then it became something in the order of an alligator. We've got a serpent somewhere in our background. Then, I don't know how in the world they do this, but they get a tree-climbing possum in most of these family trees, which evolved into a lemur, which is a very small monkey. Now, this is the old one. Now, of course, they've got different ones, but they really do get very, very vague on where things go after the monkeys parted paths from us. But you still find many of them still put an ape in our background. And then they make a chimpanzee practically last, and then a professor of biology at Yale. Homo sapien, or I call him sapien. Remember, that's science. I like what the Bible says in the Authorized Version, falsely so-called. There's no science in that at all. If it wasn't so tedious, I'd like to bring a few paragraphs from that book from Yale and read it to you. Even the president of Yale. Utter foolishness and the assumptions. The stumble-bumbling, I like to call it that. It comes about as close to what I can think of as anything in the world. By a serious head of a biology department, too. That Conklin. You're dismissed.